know, when you talk about differences between men and women today, I don't know why, but someone always gets upset. It does not matter what you say. This is Tim Ray Millington. You are listening to Trending. With me in studio today is Chris Mueller. Chris, did you hear about that lecture? Or actually, I think it was just, you know, a open forum that was taking place at Evergreen State College. At Portland University, Evergreen State College biologist was there. And she was talking about men and women.
Are you confused? Are we at a point in our society where if we just point out the obvious, people are going to get upset?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, because it's okay.
I think I'm sexist because I'm going to refer to you with a male pronoun.
And I am offended by it. I prefer the Z, if you would. I'm not a he, I'm a Z. That is so ridiculous. Yeah, just for pointing out that men and women are biologically different, I guess students got up and walked out from this lecture?
Oh, they didn't just walk out. They sabotaged the sound system.
That is so bizarre.
And they ended up bringing security in. So basically, you have a Heather E. Hang, who is a biologist for Evergreen State College. I messed that up there in the beginning there. She came to Portland State University, and there was a forum of about three different biologists, I believe. And she gets up there and says, basically, she's going to talk about differences between men and women. And this is what she says. There are explicit differences anatomically and physiologically between men and women.
I'm going to leave right now. I am sabotaging the radio show because I cannot believe you would say that. That is awful.
So here's the first sexist thing I'm going to say. You're taller than me, Chris.
That's true.
Here's a second sexist thing I'm going to say. I can gestate and lactate. You can't.
I am offended, and I don't think it's fair.
It's easier for you to build muscle mass, and you have more natural muscle mass.
That is very true. Good Lord. You know, it's so bizarre. And again, if you're really a feminist, and again, I'm not, and these people may or may not have been, but there's been a real tragedy in medicine where a lot of medical studies haven't been done with mixed groups enough so you can see, because women's bodies are different from men's bodies. Shouldn't we be saying, no, women's bodies are different. We need medical, you know, studies just for women so we can see and know and understand how that affects women differently than men. And
Hold on a second. Are you saying that they only do medical studies primarily on men?
That's a thing.
I had to emphasize that because most people don't realize this, that most of the medical technologies, most of the medications are only being researched on men. I'm going to say two things. One, we're more willing to offer men up, and men are more willing to take the risk of having an experimental procedure or study done on them, right?
True.
For money or whatever it might be. Two, there's a difference between men and women because we're seeing even when you change the dosage of medications, you can change the dosage based on weight. You can change it based on size, but that doesn't matter because guess what? And this is one of the things that the biologist said that really just caused people to stand up and protest. There are even differences in the brain.
No. Oh, my goodness. You are a terrible person. Yeah. It's just stuff that's obvious, you know, and you have to be so indoctrinated in ideology to pretend like it isn't. But I've got kids. I say this every show. I've got six kids. We've got boys and girls, and they're different. I mean, they're different. They look different. They're made different. They think different. They act different. And it's not because I'm not a gun owner. I'm not a member of the NRA. We don't have guns in our home. I can tell you my 2-year-old came charging around the corner with a gun made of Legos, and he has never actually seen a real gun in person, nor has he ever seen me fire one. He's just different. Like, he saw one on a film one time, maybe. Now that's lodged in his head. My girl's never made guns. And again, there's no role modeling here. I don't make or own guns. I didn't teach them women don't play with guns. They just weren't interested, you know?
Oh, I played with guns. I can't believe she said that. I belonged to a gun club. I played with toy guns. Oh, I had caps. I loved my gun club and my toy guns. And there was always an idea of good versus evil. I was very much a tomboy at heart. Much to people's surprise, like, yeah. But you wear pink, so.
But so what's so weird though is now that you say you're a tomboy, and so now in our modern culture, I'm supposed to go, well, maybe you need to explore the fact that you could be a man, right? I mean, that's our culture does. We just jump on it right now, and it's just crazy.
But I already know that I can be a man, Chris, because I was taught I can do anything a man can do. Not necessarily by my parents. My parents always encouraged me that if I work hard enough, there's a lot I can do, and there's probably a lot that I can't do, right? But society has taught me. Education systems have taught me, media has taught me that I can do anything better than you.
Well, it's probably true though. So you've got these college students, and college should be a time when we're confronted with challenging ideas, right? I'm not saying it shouldn't be a time of indoctrination. It shouldn't be a time where we're trying to change kids' beliefs, but challenging them so they can learn to rationally defend your beliefs, or if you have erroneous beliefs, that you can discard them.
Right.
But you're such a little baby that you've got to get up and leave the lecture when a biologist, this is not some crazy, this is a biologist talking about biology, points out the obvious, and you read that as a political thing, or it's anti your ideology, and so you're going to sabotage the equipment or walk out. What's the end game there? Like, what's a society look like when we just can't function on the obvious?
Well, and what's great is that biologist Heather Hain basically comes right in and says, and she slowly introduces basically each of these differences between men and women. She said, you can be irritated by a lot. You can be irritated by what is true. You can be angry essentially at what is true, but you are angry at what is true. You can't change it. And that's what happens. All of a sudden, she mentions the difference between male and female brains, drop the mic. What happens literally, the mic is practically ripped from her hands because the protesters march out. They destroy the sound system. They can't get the sound system back up. So it does sabotage the whole event. But one of the main people speaking stands up and says, hey, we're going to go on. He said, we're just going to raise our voices and look at what just happened. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't have discourse on a topic. You should be able to discuss anything.
Right. And okay, so say you are so violently opposed to the scientific fact that men and women's brains are different, right? Not better, but different. Then stay and defend your ideas from a rational position.
Right.
You know, don't throw a tantrum.
Ask questions. It was a panel. I'm sure they were going to offer the opportunity at a university for a Q&A. It's something that young people love and that them professors usually commonly do. And this is someone who's an expert in her field. Ask her any question. She's ready for it.
Wow. It's a scary thing. And as you know, parents, if you're listening, just talk to your kids. Just teach them how to deal with conflict. And can we have a respect for the obvious? I mean, it's like getting angry that water is H2O, you know? It's just absurd.
I think I'm sexist because I was very appreciative of male help while I was moving this week when my arms were dying after picking up box after box. Is that sexist? Because I wanted help from someone that wasn't just a female.
I do think that's sexist.
That's sexist, but like different things. Guess what? Because of the testosterone development in your body, men's shoulders are broader. They have more muscular development in their arms. Like these things that are so basic, how I work with my clients in the Pilates studio, whether they're a athlete in baseball and pro ball, or whether they're a woman who's playing water polo, it doesn't matter. There are differences there, and you could be an incredibly strong man or an incredibly strong woman.
Yeah, you know, as I'm listening to this, I know that there are people listening who have got their own stories of this, and I'd love to hear some. So can I just do this? If you have your own story of running into people who are angry at the obvious factual truth, tweet that at me. I'd love to hear some of that.
Yeah.
So you can reach me at C Mueller Tweets. It's C-M-U-E-L-L-E-R. I can spell my name, tweets, on Twitter. I would love to hear some of your stories about people just getting angry and charging out because of the obvious fact being truth being truth. It's just the ridiculousness of it amuses me greatly.
The trigger topics. You guys can also, if you're on Facebook right now, you can post on Facebook. We're always on Facebook Live for anyone who is listening to the show, maybe in their car, didn't get to hear the whole conversation. You can listen also to the archive on the podcast. We have two shows a week, depending on the network you are listening to. You might only ever hear one. So be sure to check it out. You can get more of Chris, who has been joining me quite often lately in studio.
Yeah, I'm like a regular now.
You're a regular.
Wow.
Yes, the honorary guest of trending.
Oh, there you go. Appreciate that.
What was it last week? The beloved guest, I think.
Beloved guest. That's right. We were speaking very apostolic at that point.
Biblical last week.
Biblical.
So an interesting trend, Chris. You actually pointed this out to me. Plogging. It's a thing.
Yeah. It involves jogging and then picking up trash at the same time. So if you see trash on the side of the road as you're jogging, you then pick up the trash. I just thought it was interesting that that's a trend because apparently being a decent human being is now a trend. Like when you see trash picking it up, that's now a trend. It's a thing.
You know, I'm going to point to the differences between men and women here again in a second. Before I say that, people are doing it because it burns more calories. Also because it's just very altruistic. You know, it's giving to Mother Earth. It's, you know, helping to keep the environment clean. But I was talking to a friend the other day and I said, I do this funny thing and I always have. And I don't know what made me bring it up. But when I wash my hands, no matter where I am, I clean the bathroom sink out. Wherever I am, like I make sure it gets clean. Like,
oh, I definitely don't do that.
Your face right now looking at me. So I'm just splashing water. And a friend goes, I do that too. And then it turned into this conversation that women just have a tendency to clean in environments where they're not. So then the next day I'm at the store and this woman's cleaning up the different clothing racks. And her husband walks up and goes, what are you doing, honey? I'm sorry, you know I just do this. And I started laughing because it's just one of those differences. Women are used to kind of just taking care of things, keeping things tidy. They want to see things beautiful.
The thought of cleaning the sink in the public restroom gives me such heebie-jeebies that my relationship with this is barely touch anything and then try to get it with as little contact as possible. And then, you know,
I
will open the doors with my elbows. I want no part of it.
I'm the same way. I won't even touch anything. Yeah. I use a paper towel to open the door, but I'm just splashing water in the sink to just kind of get it cleaned out.
Nope. Not me. I'm out.
Differences between men and women?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
Apparently, yeah, another story. If you're a woman.
If I see a sink that needs to be cleaned, I will avoid it. Okay. Or I won't wash my hands in there. I'll just be like, you know what? I am cleaner than that sink. I'm walking out. That's my, you know, I didn't touch anything, but nope. Okay. Yep.
Oh gosh, this is great. Yep. But again, something that is just a part of who we are, part of something that we do. I'm not saying that women are obsessed with cleaning, that women only clean. It's just women are used to, they enjoy or they take responsibility for cleaning sometimes in a way that men don't. That's just a fact. We'll be right back on Trending. You're listening to Chris and Timory. You can tweet me at Timory and Chris at
C. Mueller Tweets.
Welcome back to Trending. This is Timory Millington. I am not wrong, Chris. That's Chris Mueller, by the way, about the whole sink cleaning thing. Someone on Facebook, another woman, just commented and said, ha ha, sink thing. My mom taught me that too.
That is just so weird to me.
It's a woman thing.
I would never even conceive of cleaning the sink in the public restroom. My mom taught me, don't touch anything.
Touch anything though. That's what you got to understand. I mean, I will not touch anything. And I have to say, if it's an automatic faucet or like one where you push it and it only gives you like 2 seconds and you're like, oh, my hands aren't clean, right?
Yep.
I won't do it in those ones because there's no way to stay sanitary. But if it'll keep running, oh yeah, I'm getting some splashing in.
Who invented the push down thing where it's like you have to touch it and then it goes off and you touch it? I hate it. Oh gosh. And I feel like sometimes those motion controlled ones are there just to make me feel insignificant because they never register on me.
Am I a ghost? It's like if I were a priest, I would feel like I'm going in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit over and over again over the sink because that's basically what I do trying to get the sink to work.
I thought for a moment I was incorporeal because down the restroom here on site, I was trying to, I have 3 sinks. I'm like walking around, but somebody just rinse my hands, please, some sink.
Okay. Anyway. I thought it was just me because I feel like everyone else when you're in the public restroom is able to get it working and I'm like,
do I not know the code? Am I not doing the thing? Anyway.
Like, am I too short? What is it? Yeah. If you have stories, love to hear your cleaning stories because I get that this is not just me. And I thought I was the only person, Chris, that cleaned out the bathroom sinks.
I'm going to continue to believe that it is only you, despite what Facebook says.
Okay, ask your wife. And I'm going to guarantee that if she doesn't do it too, there's something else like it that she will do.
I will say to my young men, if we go in to use the restroom, number one, he said on radio. Anyway, if I go in and do that, I will say to them, did you touch anything but yourself? And if they say no, I say, we're out of here. It's because I'm not risking the contact with the sink at that point. We'll hand sanitize on the outside.
Anyway. So do you carry hand sanitizer in your pocket?
I don't, but my wife does. So there's always that.
I've got it in my purse. I am a clean person, although you doubt me now, Chris.
No, I believe you're clean. I just, too clean.
A little too clean. Clean the bathroom sinks
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Yep.
So there's this new show on Netflix that is really interesting to me because it reminds me of a movie that I remember watching in psychology a number of years back. But it's this new show called The Push.
Yeah, I actually watched this over the weekend and it's interesting. So the whole premise is that a lot of our actions we take credit for are more like a manipulation of the culture, the society around us, or the people we're hanging out with. And so we're not, our free will isn't as free as we think it is, I guess. And so the, what they do is they take a guy and they put him in a scenario surrounded by 70 actors who he doesn't know are actors. And ultimately they try to put him in a place where his only choice is to kill a dude. And it's fascinating to watch.
So how many different people did they, so this, the premise is they're all surrounded by actors, right?
Right, yeah.
So then how many different people are there not aware that they're surrounded by actors?
So it's just him and the rest of the people are actors.
Okay.
Now, and so they actually ran this like four times. They had that four different people go through it.
Example.
Right, yeah. So, and it was interesting because, you know, and I, following the show, and I think I would recommend it. You can't watch it with your kids because there is some colorful language. So if you have young people and, you know, that your discretion, watch it first and then you decide. What was fascinating is the one that we see his whole story, there are a couple points where he does step back and go, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. At points where he's asked to do things that are just a little bit too outrageous. And ultimately, he does not kill the guy.
He does not kill the guy.
He does not kill the guy. But they then show you the outtakes from the other people who went through it, and most of them did.
Most of them did.
They actually push a human being off a roof.
So what got them to the point that they were willing to cave into peer pressure, right?
Yeah.
Authority? What
fear.
Made the fear? What
so
made them willing to?
What was fascinating is it just starts with little acts. So this guy is there to do network stuff, right? And people ask him, hey, could you get that bag for me? And so he just starts following directions, little things. And then a little lie, just a little lie at first. Somebody mistakes him for somebody else and he doesn't correct it, right? And then it goes on. And then now because he's been mistaken for that person, he has to then take his role in something. And so it's just a little lie becomes a bigger lie, until all of a sudden now it looks like he's going to go to jail for maybe the rest of his life. And his only out is to kill this one guy. But wow, like how much is that? You know, you just talk about the nirication of sin, venial
sin. That's what
sin.
I was thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Man, like this is so, so prevalent in terms of how we struggle with sin and how one small thing for early on just transitions into a deeper sin. You know, a little lie turns into covering up, not just for someone else, but covering up for yourself because you got away with it here. You know,
mm-hmm.
How far can we go? How far can we pretend to be someone we aren't? You know, what can we do just to get by, just because we're scared, because we want to fit in? And to the point where here, this guy's willing to commit murder or he's going to go to prison. Well, what about in our spiritual lives? We're either going to hell, right? Or we're going to have a fun life while we're here, right? We're going to have a fun life while we're here, or we can go to confession. Say that sin aloud. Be forgiven by Christ present in the priest, in the confessional, in persona Christi. Like, I think a lot of people don't know this, Chris, that the priest, not only on the altar when he's doing the transubstantiation of, right, the blood of Christ into the blood of Christ from the wine or the bread into the body of Christ, just like he's in the person of Christ then, he is then in the person of Christ in persona Christi in the confessional. You are confessing your sins to Christ, and that's why they are blotted out.
Yeah. You know, I think what I love about this is you see how these lies that seemed easy in a moment just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think so many people, we get caught in sin and it seems easy in the moment or it's not that big of a deal, you know, but then it just continues to pile up and pile up and pile up. And all of a sudden now you're in this, you don't know how to get out of it. Right.
Right.
You know, I loved it because I watched this weekend and the gospel, the liturgy of the word for the last weekend was the giving of the law. It was the Ten Commandments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Jesus, he's cleansing the temple. But the end of that, it says he did not trust himself to them because he didn't need anybody to tell him about human nature.
Right.
Right? He knew it well.
He knew what human nature
was. And we forget that the law, like the commandments, the teachings of the church, they're there to keep us happy, healthy, safe, going to heaven, right? And if you're founded in that, then you're not going to find yourself in a position where you've got no other choice but to kill a dude, no matter what happens around you, because that first step, you just didn't start that chain of events that led you to that point because you're living a righteous life.
You know, it makes me think of our last show. If you didn't catch it, we were talking about the importance of young men needing father figures, needing the example of fathers, active fathers, and specific things that fathers need to do to grow young men. And it makes me think, you know, looking at this, man, these people were willing to give in to peer pressure. They were willing to give in to fear. They were willing to take unhealthy risks. And, you know, I look back and I look at the experiment that was done back in 1961 by one of the professors at Yale, Stanley Milgram, which a movie was made out of it. I think it was called The Experimenter. And it was basically testing to see one person. The test was one person was supposed to be a teacher, one person was the student. And the teacher, if the student got a question wrong, was basically supposed to zap them with high voltage. Now, the voltage started decently low. I think it was like, 25 volts. And then it would incrementally get up to 450 volts. And what was so shocking about it is that it got to the point where 65% of the role play teachers were willing to zap at a very high voltage the person who got the question wrong.
They thought they were tasing them. Yeah,
they thought they were, because in the movie they're actually acting, right? Where in the example of the movie that we see, they're acting.
Right.
So the other person doesn't know, oh, this isn't real, but they can see physically they're in pain.
They think it's real. They think they're tasing people. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It makes me think, you know, we are willing to do something because an authority figure told us to. And in the example of Stanley Milgram, that's what it was as well. So-and-so told me to, but then at one point toward the end of the movie, one of like the people who's doing the zapping is asked who bore the responsibility for the fact that this man was being shocked. And the man's answer was, I don't know. And that's where we're willing to do things, but we don't take responsibility for it. We don't even recognize who would have responsibility. It's like you have a human life in your hands. These abortionists today, for example, they have a life in their hands. They're taught in medical school how to perform abortions. They're taught that it's a form of medicine. And then they go and they perform the abortions. And I think some of these doctors, while I think some of them are just truly evil, some of them are justifying what they're doing. Some of them, you know, I don't think they dreamt of getting there, but they are. But I think that if you were to ask some of them, they wouldn't see responsibility because they would see it as something that they were taught to do.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think a less extreme example, you look at most Catholic families who are watching just the same television that everybody else is watching. Mm-hmm. You know, we're watching Game of Thrones, right? We're watching, you know, these sitcoms with our kids. We're watching all of this garbage, you know, weekly. And we don't, is it wrong? Whose fault is it? Am I bad? No, I'm a good person. But we're taking in things that in other eras would have been considered pornography, or still are today. I mean, Game of Thrones, it's wizard porn.
Oh my gosh, that's a trigger warning. Game of Thrones and every person that justifies watching that.
I can't.
Lost all respect.
It's just a thing. I don't know how you can get around that. You can't. But again, it's just the way life is.
Right.
And that's why we need these biblical truths. That's why we need the teaching of the church, because if we're tethered to, you know, this kind of true democracy where it's just the whim of whatever's going on at the current time, we're going to find ourselves very, very far afield. And what we're seeing the results of it, we're seeing what happens in a society that doesn't have a grounding in truth and in these traditional beliefs and institutions.
I would recommend, you know, again, Chris said, don't watch it with young children, but watch The Push, check it out, and just use it as an opportunity to talk to people about how we look at peer pressure and fear. We'll be right back on Trending. Welcome back to Trending. This is Timory. We are live in studio. If anyone ever wants to check it out, you can watch us in studio on my Facebook page, facebook.com/Timory. We're also starting to broadcast this on YouTube as well. You can find it at Trending with Timory on YouTube. And that is Chris Mueller. So for anyone who sees the waving on camera, Chris is joining me in studio. We're just talking a little bit about The Push, new Netflix show. Check it out. Maybe not with your kids, but definitely thought-provoking. I would love to hear your thoughts. You can tweet Chris or I. I'm at Timory, also on Instagram, or
C. Mueller Tweets. It's M-U-E-L-L-E-R.
We are going, I was going to add I-E there because I was thinking you were spelling my name and I hear E-R. I'm like, I-E, add to the end. So this week, I have just continued to see this trend of people who have been vocally discussing their challenges with their phone. And someone completely separate from the Catholic world, separate from the black and white challenge. By the way, shout out to all of you who are doing my black and white challenge this Lent. You can check it out at timory.com. Basically turning your phone screen into black and white to kind of help detach from, you know, the desire of the dopamine. Actually, the first week I did it, about 7-8 months ago now. I remember looking at my phone for the first week. Every time I picked it up, Chris, I'm like, this is so dissatisfying. And right. I put it down.
You know, I see that our Facebook Live here in studio looks black and white, and I didn't actually understand why that was until right now.
He's like, her phone is just broken. She really didn't want to do the update.
It's like a film noir thing we're doing. Yeah.
But we are not black and white to them.
Oh, okay.
So I was at dance last night actually, and taking a ballet class, and the teacher sitting there, and he's like, yeah, I'm getting used to wearing a watch. And he said, watches are good things. And we're all, okay, like in the middle of dance class, he goes, they're very good things. He goes, I realize I'm a slave to my phone just to check the time. And as I'm a slave to my phone to check my time, then I start doing other things too. Once I check the time, boom. Yeah. I'm gone. And it actually made me think maybe part of the reason why our hands are itching to pick our phones up, because they literally are, admit it. Maybe part of the reason is because we want to know what time it is. And we don't realize that that's part of the reason that's driving us to pick up the phone too.
No, absolutely. I've fallen into that trap. Oh, check the time. And Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And then all of a sudden you're like, it's been 20 minutes. What happened to my time? Yeah, I've worn a watch for years, kind of bucking that trend. I used to have a little, you know, $45, you know, Iron Man or something. And then my friends bought me an iWatch, which is great. I love it. It was my 40th birthday. Wonderful. But I've turned everything off on my iWatch because I just want a watch so I don't have my stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm one of these guys who's trying to get out of the smartphone. I mentioned this on previous shows. I've taken all the social media off my phone. I've taken the web browser off my phone. And I did that when we brought the baby home because I realized it's just not fair for me to be present to people who aren't here and not be present to the people who are here. You know, the mm-hmm. people in the room with me need me more than the people out there. Yeah. You know?
Well, and thank you for recognizing that, because I think that's a struggle. I can't tell you how many events I go to or social gatherings, and almost everyone's on their phone. And I just feel like that awkward person sitting there. And Grant, you know, maybe I'm not making conversation at the time, but I feel like a lot of the time people aren't comfortable with sitting in silence, or I'm the only person making conversation because they're not present. Their mind's somewhere else in a different conversation.
Yeah, totally. Now it's weird. I when I gave that up, I swear I went through withdrawals. Like I felt like nauseous for a couple of days, and I was like, and
really?
And that might just be me. I'm a little bit psychosomatic anyway.
Dramatic?
Poquito. So I tried to say poco and then it said poco, which is nothing. It doesn't mean anything. So poquito.
Poquito.
Yeah. Went from Italian to Spanish and then I just made up a word.
Yeah. But that draw of the phone, I mean, it's really a struggle. I remember, so when I was in college, no social media apps on my phone. The only thing I have now, I do have Instagram. I don't really check it unless I'm posting. And I do have Twitter because I post for the show, and I am just constantly driving. If I could take both of those off, I would. But like, I'd have to re-download them each time I'm in studio to have my tools with me for work. But then that means it's almost good for me to have that self-control of, no, I can't just hop on when I'm sitting here.
Right. You know, there's something beautiful about a bored mind. You know, we spend our lives avoiding being bored, but you look at inventors over the centuries, you know, how many important things happened because someone's mind wandered, you know, and we've taken that out, you know?
Right. And if you spend time in Silicon Valley, what's really interesting is they have all of these more classical oriented education systems and schools that do not use any technology. They will not use iPads. They will not allow iPhones inside. They don't really use in computers. They do teach them how to type, but later on. But part of that is because the inventors of the social media apps, of the digital world we are living in, recognize that there are psychological tricks that are being used by Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, that intentionally are there to grab attention so that you use their app so they make more money.
Yeah, it's like a casino on your phone. You know, it's designed to keep you there just sticking coins in the machine, you know, bing, 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 with all the right cues and the visual flashing lights and the whole thing.
Oh, I can't. Just don't leave your sounds on for your games. I hate it when people have their sounds on for their clicking and typing for their games. I'm like, you're giving me legitimately a headache.
Who are you? Right? I agree. You'd think like, you know, I don't need... Okay, we all know you got a text now. You're very important, okay?
It's like, turn it off.
Seriously.
Please.
Yeah, but it's you.
It's like every 5 seconds a noise.
Yeah, now when I whistled like that, half the audience checked their phone.
I thought of my phone. That's my sound.
There you go.
That is my sound. Yeah. When I have it on, I actually don't even have a vibrate on any of my text messages.
Right.
don't have a vibrate on any of my text messages, only on my calls. And most of the time I have my phone on vibrate, because reality is if I'm with people, I shouldn't just be picking up my phone and be at the beck and call of others.
Now, the other side of this, though, is we've gotten so used to, I call someone, they pick up the phone or text, and they instantly get back to me, that when someone doesn't text you back immediately, people start going, oh my gosh, I wonder if something's wrong. Did I do something? Did I offend them? Are they angry at me? What's happening? Because we're so on the other side, we need that little dopamine rush or whatever it is, right, of that contact, that, yeah, we've become this weird kind of, we're just so needy now, you know, like I just need to know you're there. You know?
Have we mentioned actually the big news this week? And that is that the dumb phones continue to come back.
No, I don't think we actually touched on it yet.
Dumb phones are coming back. Isn't that so funny? We have the smartphones that have not necessarily made us smarter. I think that we can know a lot with our smartphones, but we don't understand as much.
Yeah, there's a company, Light, and they actually did a quick starter to start this product. And it is literally, it's the shape of an iPhone, but all it has is numbers on it. And you can make a phone call.
And send text messages and get basic directions.
Right. And that's all it is. And there's part of me, they did a quick starter, and they're beautiful. They're kind of elegant and really well-designed phones. But there's part of me that's just like, didn't we already have these phones? I mean, couldn't we just gone back to 2003 and grabbed one of those phones and brought it back to now? Do we need a quick start?
I was such a good texter. I would just like, I didn't even have to look at people. I'd be like sliding my finger over the numbers, double tap for the B, triple tap for the C.
There is the generation gap, because I had that phone. I was like, I don't need a text. I'll make a phone call.
Oh, you know what? I actually,
like old man Joe, I ain't going to do that text messaging.
You know what? I actually think I was better at multitasking. Well, maybe just because I was young, I thought I was good at everything,
there,
right? But at texting and talking at the same time then. And I think it's because it was more tactile. You felt the buttons you were gliding, versus now you actually fully have to engage in your phone in order to write something.
No, I see that. I know a lot of business people who really miss and lament that BlackBerry for that text. Mm. They could just kind of, it was like typing on a keyboard. They didn't have to look at it.
Right. Yeah. Because you think about it, I can have a conversation, be typing on my computer.
Yep.
It's easier than being on my phone. Man, the phone just like draws me.
Oh, yeah.
So this phone, you'll have to check it out. I'll tweet it out. It's the Light Phone 2 now, because since their Kickstarter, I think they've gotten some more funding. Has a larger speaker, great microphone. It has pretty sleek design. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of sitting here thinking this would be great if I could find ways to use my Facebook Live. Anyone listening should be on there in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's almost like you wish, and I wish I could have a camera and my music and my phone all in one thing. I remember thinking that at the gym one day years ago, and now I've gotten so used to it, you go, oh, I'd totally give up my smartphone, but oh, I wouldn't have a camera. How did I survive for, 30 years without a camera? How did I do it? Or, I think it's neat. Now, if you're listening and you're really tempted and you have a smartphone, you can go in that restrictions menu and you can turn a whole bunch of stuff off. You can delete those apps that are giving you trouble. You can set those restrictions and you can kind of take control of that phone too. There's a way to do that.
And that black and white, I have to keep pushing it. It makes a world of difference when you have that change in color. And also because you're not as interested in looking at the photos, although the photos look pretty cool in black and white. And if you take photos, for anyone's like, oh, I love to take pictures, they're actually still in color. It's just that your physical screen is black and white.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've done that. It does change the whole thing on your phone for sure.
So, one of the things that we're seeing right now in this Me Too campaign that is so popular, I just wanted to spend a brief second in it, is that while everyone's talking about the sexual abuse that's taking place for minors, that is taking place for women, not a lot of people are recognizing this partnership between so often Planned Parenthood, hint, hint, Cecil Richards being on the stage at the Academy Awards this week. The fact that the abortion industry has actively for years covered up rape cases, statutory rape cases, sexual abuse of minors, sex trafficking. They've not reported on it. There was actually just a recent teleconference done online of a ton of former abortion clinic workers who have admitted to enabling the sexual abuse of minors, where they'd recognize that a girl came in, the father was older, they coached her how to get around the law so that they could try to avoid basically reporting that she was underage when she abused her. They'd say, don't tell us how old the partner was, because I'd have to report it and he would get in trouble. And of course, most young girls, even if they have been sexually abused, are going to try and cover it up. They don't want people to know, or they feel like they did something wrong.
And that coaching is taking place in states where they have parental notification laws, or they have these requirements. Here in California, where we're recording, we don't have any of that. You can just go to your school nurse and they'll drive you to get an abortion in some cases. If abortion was a good that helped prevent pregnancy, And it doesn't prevent pregnancy. It just ends pregnancy. It terminates life. But if it was a good that helped prevent it, then statistics would back that up. They don't. What statistics show is that, you know, we're not getting healthier as a culture. We don't see less child abuse. We see more child abuse. We don't see less of these horrible, you know, human trafficking situations. We see more of them. Why? Because this makes human trafficking possible, right? The product that you're selling, that human being, well, you know, they get pregnant, they're out of rotation, right? But if you just take and get an abortion, back in rotation, you can sell that person over and over and over and over again. I mean, this is horrific. And I can't, you know, I just can't believe it's something that goes on like this.
This is a business and it's preying on the backs of young people. You're listening to Trending. Chris and I will be right back. Sexual abuse of minors, it is a thing today that is absolutely heartbreaking. It is at the forefront of the Me Too movement. It is what is just making us so angry at Hollywood. It is what has made people angry at the church, yet people are not angry enough at the abortion industry. The abortion clinic workers, Chris, I was just talking, there were a bunch of clinic workers that came out in this big webcast, and they've been talking about this for years from this organization called And Then There Were None. These are people who leave the abortion industry. If you know someone maybe who wants to get out, just to talk to them. They even help with helping transition financially from one job to the next to get you away from working with women to help them have an abortion, because most people do not dream of being an abortion clinic worker. It's not what they want to do. And unfortunately, what happens is, we talked earlier in the show about one lie becoming a bigger lie to the point where we're literally willing to kill someone to save our skin. Well, this is what's happened to these clinic workers. They are mandated reporters. If they know there's sexual abuse going on, or if they are suspect to it, they're required to report it. Just like Chris and I are working with youth. We're mandated reporters. We're required to report if there is sexual abuse or we suspect it.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of got in a rant that brought us right up into the break last time, but these people are mandated reporters. And okay, so, and I'm not saying this, but if you're a person who has a mindset that you think abortion is a good, I think that's a twisted thing, and you know, that it is, it's twisted, you're wrong. But if that's where you're at, that's where you're at. But if you're a mandated reporter and you think you're doing a good for someone by helping them terminate a pregnancy, how can you convince yourself that you're doing good by keeping them in an abusive situation? You know, how can you do that? How can you, a young person comes to you for help and ostensibly you think you're giving them help, but then you continue to allow them to be raped. You continue to allow them to be sold in human trafficking. You continue to allow them to be abused by people who should be in positions of trust and respect. We really have to take a hard look at this, because it is rampant in the abortion industry. I mean, it's been proven time and again by exposés, and yet nothing is done. There's no work done on it. There's no police organization going in and doing sting operations on abortion clinics. Why not? They're enabling abuse. We would do this in any other organization.
Right. Well, and not only are they enabling abuse, they are actually destroying all evidence. So
yeah.
What happens is, man gets a girl pregnant, he raped her, he molested, let's say, his stepdaughters. I'm going to talk about it in a second here. What happens is they then go and have the abortion. The abuser takes her to have the abortion. Planned Parenthood is aware. There are triggers. You can tell. You can tell when something is happening. And these kids often say something, or they avoid it because they know someone's going to get in trouble. They're emotional. It should be these clinic workers. If you believe in abortion, then you should be pro-woman and at least be doing the best you can to get the woman out of the situation she is in to need that abortion. Because let me tell you, working in the crisis pregnancy center, sidewalk counseling, I don't think a single woman truly wants to have an abortion. It's circumstances, mindset, justifications that have gotten her to that point. A lot of the time there's sexual abuse. There is not even just sexual abuse, but a promiscuous lifestyle, because she's searching for love. She's hungry. She came from a broken family. There's so much to it. And so, like, Chris, you look at this and you go, these are people who need help, not the destruction of evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unconscionable.
So here's a story, Chris. There's this young woman, we'll call her RZ, and I'll tweet out a link to this article, but she was being sexually abused by her stepfather from a young age. Well, after a number of years, 13 years old, she ends up getting pregnant and he takes her to the abortion clinic. He doesn't have the same last name as her, when in fact, they're actually supposed to have the same last name in most states in order to obtain the abortion. But Planned Parenthood workers have actually admitted to the fact that often we know they don't have the same last name, so we just say, oh, it's a step stepfather, or the mom changed her name after a divorce, and they justify it. And then when they go and show the records that are supposed to be checked to keep everything above board, they only show certain cases, or they're buddy-buddy with the abortion industry, who all says, well, a woman should be able to have an abortion no matter what. So even though there's a law that should be protecting vulnerable teenagers, minors, it's not. So what happens to this girl? The father with a different last name, the stepfather, ends up taking her for the abortion. He doesn't pick her up. He sits in the car. She walks out by herself, which, by the way, that's trauma to the body. They often need help or should have help coming out of that procedure. Well, then what happens is years later, the abuse continues to take place, and she finally tells her mother. Mm-hmm. Mom calls the police, and what do? They end up contacting Planned Parenthood, Chris, and Planned Parenthood has records of the abortion and records of the fact that they actually put her back into the hands of her abuser.
Wow. But so where's the lawsuit?
So then they're sued. Planned Parenthood sued. Did you see what happened?
No, I didn't. No.
Planned Parenthood then is sued by the mom. The stepfather basically claims guilty. Planned Parenthood sued. Basically, what happens is Planned Parenthood then settles outside of court. And even the judge, in looking at this, commented and said that Planned Parenthood's actions were so heinous that punitive damage would have been appropriate, and basically comments that settling outside of court wasn't enough. And it makes me ask this. So how much money are you willing to take to make it okay for this business to continue to allow for the abuse of children just like yours?
And again, I go back to that point I made earlier. Where are the civil authorities going, okay, this, we see this is happening. We know that there was this court settlement. We need to now be doing investigations to make sure that this thing is not continuing to happen, that it is being stopped. Where is that? It's nowhere. Why? Because Planned Parenthood is in the pocket. It's this secular thing where they give money to these politicians, and these politicians then give money back from our taxes to support Planned Parenthood, and it just goes round and round and round, and there's no accountability in it, and this kind of stuff just continues. The only way it's going to stop is if we, you listening, me here, if we get engaged and active and say, we're not going to deal with this anymore. We're just not going to let this happen anymore. Again, this isn't a political show. But when this kind of stuff, when kids are being abused like this, we need to get involved. We need to talk to our representatives. We need to take those actions to say this isn't acceptable. This can't happen.
And it's not even being political to say you need to be involved in politics, because laws change and save lives. Laws have changed the way we look at our moral conscience, right? And it impacts that. When you have an area that says you need parental consent to have an abortion, well, that actually makes a kid go, well, I don't know if I can get away. They don't know that they can necessarily get away with having an abortion without their parent. So they're less likely to go off and have an abortion, or maybe even have the mindset that if I do get pregnant, I can just have an abortion, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Totally changes how we look at things. And so laws matter. And this is what came out of this webcast, is a lot of the former abortion clinic workers were saying, hey, there are actually some awesome pro-life laws set in place in different states, different counties, but they're not being monitored. They're not being implemented. And this is where my message to you guys, if you know you have great pro-life laws, work to help make sure they're being enforced. Right. Help to get a ballot, right? Basically enforcing, how is this now enforced? The law is here, but no one's making sure it happens.
Or if you're in a state like California where you don't have parental notification laws, and you were sold that saying, oh, it's going to protect kids. Mm. You were just sold a bill of goods, because what's happening now is that is being taken advantage of in many cases by abusers, because they know that they can just send them to the abortion clinic. And a lot of times the government will then pay for their abortion, right? At least in California.
Well, and I keep looking at this whole situation of Planned Parenthood covering up the cases. One of the things a Planned Parenthood worker commented is that basically if they suspect that a child's been sexually abused or there's foul play, that if they then contact the authorities, well, law enforcement has to be there during the whole procedure of the abortion. And what that means is they are then taking samples of the specimens, might I add, babies, to be collected. Why, Chris? To test the DNA. And it's a reminder of the humanity of that child. We're talking about this from the perspective of that young woman. But we're forgetting that before that conversation should even take place, there's a baby there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, we have been talking about this from the point of, why are you not protected? If you are a person who believes abortion is a good, you're terribly wrong. But if that's where you're at, how can you then continue in abuse of a person who's been abused to the point to get them that abortion? There's just so much wrong here. We got to pray for our broken, broken culture.
You know, and I look at it, though, and you look at this, the Walk for Life taking place across the country. You look at the March for Life in D.C. You see that there's more support than ever for the pro-life movement. And you guys, we have to remember that the pro-abortion movement is small. It's just that they are loud and they have a lot of money. But you guys, you too have a voice and you're passionate. And sometimes, you know, we've talked a lot on the last show about how, you know, boys need to be willing to take risks. And that's part of growing up. All of us need to be willing to take risks, to speak out against sexual activity outside of marriage, to talk to someone who's pregnant and scared.
Yeah. And it's, again, I think there's something on the part of most people like myself who have these values. We believe abortion is murder because it is. We're busy raising families and doing things. Well, you know, I'm not going to go march. And that's and kind of the crazies, the ones who then get seen because they're the ones who are not engaged in those normal things. But even if you just wore a pro-life t-shirt, or even if every person with a pro-life position just made one call to their local assemblyman, it would change everything. If your town people saw that this wasn't the crazy, you know, conservatives, it's just that the mainstream of America is this way, it would change things. We have an obligation to live our beliefs out loud publicly.
Right, and you have an opportunity today to pray for a Supreme Court case that will be heard on March 20th, NIFLA versus Becerra, which is actually trying to force California pregnancy centers to promote abortion. More on that coming up. But you guys, pray. There is hope. We are pro-life, and life matters. You're alive, aren't you? We'll talk to you next week.